On today's episode of Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures, we talk about an amazing song from a mediocre movie.
We talk about a song that has some bonkers drumming in it and may have referenced Princess Diana.
And we talk about the unlikeliness of a drive-in movie theater at the top of a canyon.
We welcome Kate Angle onto our episode of Blaze of Glory by John Bon Jovi.
Some 34 years ago, a movie came out, and the opening lines were spoken like this. Emilio Estevez playing an 82-year-old brushy Bill Roberts. That movie was Young Guns 2. And Emilio Estevez won the Oscar for Best Old Man Voice in the history of Oscars.
That may be the best opening we've ever had. That's really good.
I was so nervous about doing that. I'm really sweaty right now.
That's your best performance. I'm including grade school plays that we've seen you in.
That's a pretty low bar there, Bill.
Does auspicious mean terrible? It was an auspicious beginning to Young Guns 2. Your opening was auspicious in the good sort of way to our podcast.
I'm going to have to take your word for it that the word means both good and bad, because I have no idea what the word means.
I think it's like particular.
Gotcha. So it was a very particular opening. Yes,
it was.
Well, welcome to Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures. We are in the midst of our special movie series.
March Music Movie Month.
That's right. And this week, we are doing a very special song from a not-so-special movie. We are featuring Blaze of Glory by John Bon Jovi from Young Guns 2. We have brought on a very special guest for her third time, because she is our Bon Jovi-ologist. Because I believe, Kate, you actually went to a concert by Bon Jovi.
I did. Live at the Air Canada Centre sometime in the early 2000s, maybe. I don't know whatever the name of the arena was.
Yeah,
sometime
I think it was
between 2004 and 2007 is when I went.
So there's a really sort of specific memory in your mind that you can narrow it down to a 3-year gap there.
Well, exactly.
Did they play this song at the concert?
I'm sure they did.
So you are
so
quite
much
the fan.
That you remember the exact set list too.
I'm sure he did. How could he not?
Yeah, I think they play it at all their shows, and despite it not being a Bon Jovi song, but it's a John Bon Jovi song, and there is a difference. I know it's confusing, but there is a difference.
I think we should just dive into this. All three of us watched Young Guns 2 in the past week.
Yes.
We all...
It's an auspicious movie in the sense that it's particular.
It's particularly bad.
Yeah, it's not good.
I watched the movies in a very particular way. I started with Young Guns 2, then watched Young Guns 1.
I did the same thing.
I knew that I would have to cleanse the palate, because I remember as a kid watching Young Guns 2, and I talked to a friend of ours, let's call him Pastor Mike, about this last week, and he said that even as a child, he somehow knew that this movie wasn't very good.
Yeah.
But Young Guns was very enjoyable.
Oh, yeah. Young Guns is amazing. And for as fun and, I guess, almost irreverent that you might think of the movie, it is relatively historically accurate.
Right. Now, Kate, you watched them in order. Right? Do you watch Young Guns 1, then Young Guns 2?
I did, yes.
Wow.
I thought that was how movies went. 1, then 2.
You didn't know what Young Guns 2 was going to bring for you.
Yeah,
No.
I mean, you're not incorrect, but I think mentally, socially, it's better to end on a high note.
Okay. How did you find Young Guns 2?
Less than auspicious, interesting, kind of.
I better look up auspicious, right?
Yeah.
I have a feeling I have this wrong.
I always thought it was kind of special. Something was auspicious, but I don't know. Yeah, it was interesting, I guess. I like...
The Cowboys?
The Cowboys.
Auspicious means promising success, favorable. Okay, well, I guess I defined that wrong.
Oh, it's fine. I define a lot of things wrong.
I found Young Guns 1 auspicious. I found Young Guns 2 suspicious. Kate, if you watched 1 and 2, there's no way you got through all of 2. Or did you fall asleep? Did you pay attention? Did you walk off?
I think I was half there, okay. For sure. There was maybe some scrolling on my phone / paying attention to the movie happening.
/ napping.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I did watch it while I was doing dishes. I made a meal and I watched over 3 days. It took me a while because it was not enjoyable.
You can only take so much, right?
Yeah, I watched it for 45 minutes one night from 11 to 11:45, went to bed, and woke up in a terrible mood. Because I was thinking about the movie.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So that was on like Monday night. Tuesday was not a good day for me.
So the song Blaze of Glory obviously is from Young Guns 2.
And it is awesome.
Oh, the song is bonkers good.
Which makes Young Guns 2 all the worse.
Yeah, because this song only comes up at the very end, like during the credit scenes.
That's what I kept waiting for. I'm like, where is the music in these movies? Like, aside from the like Western sort of instrumental.
Yeah.
I'm like, when does the song come in?
So there's a long sort of intertwined history that John Bon Jovi, and we're not going to get too much into his history or Bon Jovi's history, because there is so much to talk about. Interestingly enough, John Bon Jovi, real name is John Bovine Joni.
What is on Wikipedia? You give me what's the actual name? It's
I haven't looked that up here. Oh. Let's look it up here.
Oh, Frank's saying he didn't look up Wikipedia. Come on.
John Francis Bon Giovanni. Bon Jovi.
We're butchering the pronunciation.
Yes, exactly. So Bon Gio Bovine Joni. So I don't even know where to start with this. But we're going to go back a ways to the Slippery When Wet album. It came out in 1986. Originally, they wanted to call that album just Wanted. And it was going to have this whole cowboy theme about it.
Yeah.
Based on the strength of the song Wanted, Dead or Alive.
Yeah.
Which, again, bonkers good song. So good. And I guess they had a photo shoot for the album. And they were all dressed up like cowboys. Or sort of cowboy-esque. And they said it just looked like a glam metal band wearing cowboy clothes. In my mind, it's kind of like Marty McFly in Back to the Future 3 when he dressed up to go back to, what was it, 1886?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
So obviously they couldn't pull off the whole cowboy look. They changed the name of the album to Slippery When Wet. Slippery When Wet, huge album for Bovine Joni.
Bon Jovi, third album.
Yes.
Yeah. Are you going to keep calling Bovine Joni?
I think so, probably.
Okay. Well, someone's got to put a stop to this.
Anyways, so the guy that wrote Young Guns was, what was his name?
I believe it was John Fusco.
John Fusco, yeah. Okay, so he's writing the movie, but listening to Wanted, Dead or Alive to put himself in the mood. So he would listen to that song like 4, 5, 6 times a day as he's writing this movie for Young Guns. Young Guns comes out, movie does bonkers good. Obviously, they want a sequel. So they, in my guess is, and this is probably why Young Guns 2 feels a little half-baked, is they rush through production, they write a script, they shoot the movie, they ask Bovine Joni to write a song. No, they ask Bovine Joni
if... Okay, no, you gotta call him John Bon Jovi. Okay. We're putting a stop to this for the sake of our listeners that we're gonna lose. You take that back.
Okay.
We love New Jersey. We love John Bon Jovi.
Okay. They ask John Bon Jovi.
Thank you.
It just doesn't feel right.
You just gotta keep repeating it.
Okay. They ask him if they could use Wanted Dead or Alive for the soundtrack. He's like, I don't know. It doesn't really seem to fit because the song is about a band being on tour and on the road.
Yeah.
This is about in 1989-ish, I'm guessing. The band Bon Jovi just finishes this tour. No one in the band is talking to one another. They're shooting the movie Young Guns 2. And John Bon Jovi is friends with Emilio Estevez. So he goes like, well, I'm just going to go to the shoot. And I'm just going to hang out with my friends. He's in a diner with Emilio Estevez and Kiefer Sutherland. And they're eating burgers. And he's scribbling down on a napkin. And he writes Blaze of Glory in like 12 minutes or something. And Kiefer Sutherland says, here we are, just small talk, eating burger and fries. And John is here cranking out a number one hit single.
I didn't know about the burger and fries. I didn't know that little bit of history.
Frank's doing some deep research here.
Deep, deep research.
Is it true that Bon Jovi has a cameo in the film as well? Does that happen while he was just hanging out on set?
It must have, yeah.
It did. So there's an interview with him where he's shown up, played the song for, I guess, the director, writer.
Jeff Murphy is the director.
Okay, yeah. So they've had him play it for him. And then so he was there hanging out in New Mexico. I guess it's just super, super cold. And he's just left Mexico proper from the tour.
Yeah.
And he said it was great. They're on, like, I don't know if he was at a resort, but then he went to New Mexico where it's cold. Maybe snowing. I'm not sure. I don't know if they get snow in New Mexico.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
In places.
And he's just freezing and just waiting around. And they said, hey, while you're around, why don't you just play a role in the movie? So he and John Fusco both play two of the guys stuck in that prison pit.
Yeah.
Right, yes.
And so the scene, you remember the scene where the guy gets up with the shackles and chokes out and kills the one guy and the other guy steals the gun? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
The guy who steals the gun is John Bon Jovi.
Oh, okay.
And John Fusco is the guy who choked him out. And then John Bon Jovi immediately gets shot. And then it's Bon Jovi, but whoever got to play a stunt double does this awful tumble down the stairs.
Yeah.
He gets shot a whole bunch of times. That's his first major acting role.
Yeah.
Then he did U-571 at some point later.
Yeah, which was also Oscar worthy.
Okay, so he's got this song, but he doesn't just give them a song. He actually creates an entire album.
Yeah.
So Blaze of Glory is a soundtrack album. The opening song is about Billy, get your gun. And if you watch
But it's not used in the movie.
No, it's weird. But
it's accompanied with.
Yeah.
Because they have Little Richard is on it.
Elton John,
yeah. And it was John Bon Jovi's first solo album as a solo artist.
Yeah. So this is around the time where you'd have these companion albums. So you have Prince, who does Bat Dance album, which is 89.
Yes.
You have Madonna, who does I'm Breathless, which is 1990, same year. And then you have Young Guns 2, which has the Young Guns 2 soundtrack with Alan Silvestri's stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have the John Bon Jovi album.
Yes.
The album's not particularly memorable, but Lou Diamond Phillips sings backup on one of the songs. Elton John's actually on it as well.
Yeah.
You already mentioned all these other people. And we'll get to the personnel, which is insane. For a first solo album to have these session musicians is crazy.
Well, he's already so popular for being with Bon Jovi, right? Like with the band and everything. So he, you know, you create connections. Bill, I don't know if you know the music biz the way I know the music biz, but it's all about who you know. And John Bon Jovi knew people.
All right. Can we talk about the personnel on this album? The guitar, the memorable guitar, Jeff Beck from the Yardbirds and the Jeff Beck Group, among other things.
Oh, yeah. Guitar virtuoso.
Randy Jackson.
Yes.
Not just from American Idol, it turns out.
Yeah. He's played bass on a lot of things.
Yeah.
He's like a great session musician.
He used to play bass with Journey as well.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's right. Then there's one of the Heartbreakers. Is it Beaumont Trench?
Benmont Tench,
who's a heartbreaker. Like, I mean, I'm sure for real, but the one that played with Tom Petty as well. He plays organ. You have Kenny Arnoff, who plays in John Cougar Mellencamp's touring band and on his albums.
Yeah.
Ranked as the 66th best drummer by Rolling Stone magazine. He's the drummer. And the drums are great in this.
Oh, yeah.
And he's Elton John's drummer as well. And that's how Elton John ended up on the album.
Oh, okay.
Because while he's drumming for Bon Jovi, Elton had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Those are the personnel. So I guess John Bon Jovi is the person singing backing vocals.
Probably, yeah. My question is, so with all those musicians, who's playing the spring in the song? Like that, boing, boing.
Yeah, it is a critical instrument.
It fits the song so well.
So a bit of trivia here for you. I got a couple pieces of trivia.
Okay.
John Bon Jovi's first credited appearance on an album. Do you know what album it was on?
No.
It was on the Star Wars Christmas album.
Really?
R2-D2's We Wish You a Merry Christmas. He is the one singing We Wish You a Merry Christmas.
You're kidding
and
me.
And yeah, they put in his actual like birth name. There's a bit of trivia for you there. So I guess his cousin or uncle was like producer of it or something.
Oh, jeez.
Okay. So there's one.
It is who you know.
It is.
Yeah. See? It is.
There you go.
And if the snow becomes too deep, just give a little beep. We'll go in by the fire and warm your little wife.
Also, a bit of trivia for you here. The person who wrote the... Actually, this is on the Wikipedia site, so it's not great. But the one who wrote that guitar lick is a guy named Aldo Nova, who's a Canadian musician who comes out of Montreal. He had a song that was called like Fantasy or something from 82.
Wait, are you talking Fantasy by Mariah Carey?
No. I knew you were going there, and I was trying to stop it, but I couldn't.
No. So like a freight train, Bill.
Yeah, you are.
Once I get going, there's no stopping me.
So Aldo Nova wrote this song, and I guess he's, like, they're all interconnected. And Bon Jovi, as a favor to him, John Bon Jovi, produced his next album.
Okay.
But Aldo Nova wrote a song with Niagara's own Stephen Macchio called A New Day Has Come by Celine Dion.
Oh, really?
So Aldo Nova was one of the producers on Falling Into You by Celine Dion.
Oh, cool.
That guy's made a ton of money.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And Stephen Macchio, I don't want to try to like strut with my peacock feathers here, but I had a conversation with his brother a few years ago.
What's his brother do?
He's a teacher.
Oh, okay. So you talk to another teacher is what you're telling me.
What I'm saying is I talked to a guy whose brother wrote a song with Aldo Nova who wrote the lick for Blaze of Glory. So basically...
You're basically in the band.
Yeah, I mean...
Did you play the Springs?
Yeah, it wasn't me. But I do have... I think that's about 5 or 15 degrees of separation from John Bon Jovi. This song goes to number one.
Yes.
Gets nominated for an Oscar, wins a Golden Globe, does great.
Well, great songs do great, Bill.
Speaking of great, should we just dive into this song now?
Are you feeling this, Kate?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk lyrics.
Let's spend the next half hour just talking about the wind blowing at the very beginning.
Oh, I know. It sets the mood so well.
How long does it take for it to start?
There is a bit of a lead-in, for sure. It's got that classic, like, what I think of as, like, rattlesnake, too.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, it evokes that. I'm in the desert. John Bon Jovi's about to be on a rock without a shirt.
Yeah, the rattlesnake comes in about 6 seconds.
Yeah. Well, the song is fairly long. It's 5 minutes and 36 seconds.
It's very long, yeah. It almost feels, I hesitate to say it, it almost feels too long.
Nope.
But then.
No.
But then I'm like, I like living in this.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I had to bring that around. Frank has had his fisticuffs up there.
Yeah.
This song could be 12 minutes long, and I don't think I'd get tired of it in one go.
So we have those opening guitar, Aldo Nova-esque riffs, and then it heads into that first verse. I wake up in the morning, and I raise my weary head. I got an old coat for a pillow, and the earth was last night's bed. I don't know where I'm going, only God knows where I've been. I'm a devil on the run, a six-gun lover, a candle in the wind. Yeah.
So good.
Wake up in the morning and I raise my weary head. I've got an old coat for a pillow and the earth was last night's bed. I don't know where I'm going, only God knows where I've been. I'm a devil on the run, a six-gun lover, a candle in the wind.
But every time I go camping, I never bring a pillow and I just ball up a sweater and use that as my pillow.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't need to pack a pillow. It's just going to take up more room than I need. I'll just use a sweater that I wear all day and I'll use that as my pillow. And then I immediately regret it every single time. I have never learned. Like, I've probably only done this, you know, 12, 13, 14 times, something like that. But every single time, I'll just ball up a sweater and use it as a pillow. It can't be that bad. Every single time, I have to see the chiropractor when I get back from camping.
That's the worst. I've done that once and it was horrible.
But I love this imagery, though, of it's the Old West. The Old West was bonkers times. When you watch the movies and all this sort of stuff that goes on, and you're thinking, there's no way the Old West was this crazy. It was that crazy. Like, I haven't gone back in time necessarily, but everything that I've read from Wikipedia says, like, frontier living, Old West living, like, gunfights. There's all sorts of, like, lynchings and mobs and just, you know, just random people shooting people and stuff. That was the Old West. That's not so far off.
Not to mention, apparently you can just be deputized at any moment.
Yes.
And all of a sudden.
This happened in Tombstone too. You got to be ready. You got to be ready to be a regulator.
Exactly. Mount right. up.
Apparently, it was way safer than the movies show, though, in the Wild West in general. Is like the quality.
Not my mind. Not the way I read Wikipedia.
Because if you're in the West, you're going to live a lot longer than if you're in the East where you're just inhaling all those fumes.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was
the
one thing.
Industrialized stuff, right?
But then a lot of these towns, you had to give your guns in to whoever was holding them, like a coat check if you're going to go into the town. And it wasn't like open carry. It's like, no, your guns have to be in. So you'd have a Billy the Kid or you'd have these things going on. But like the big like OK Corral shootout was like, I think, did four people get shot or four people die? And usually when there's a shootout, you don't really hit wherever you're aiming unless you're going for Murphy at the end of Young Guns 1.
Well, and that's another thing. And I'm a fan of Western movies and all that. The accuracy in which people shoot in Westerns is way overstated. You would be lucky to hit anything.
Yeah. And not until like Lethal Weapon, which is pretty true to life, where Mel Gibson could use his handgun to shoot anyone like he was a sniper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was accurate.
Yeah, that was a different time. Yeah. Well, more to say about that first verse.
I'm getting caught up on the whole old Western thing, Ethan.
Well, you're a Western guy.
I like Western.
I'm interested in just the different phrases he uses. I mean, Candle in the Wind.
Yeah, I was surprised that the song was about Princess Diana.
I see Elton John's in the studio with, like, hey, I got an idea. Of course, it's Bernie Taupin. Well, I know. I hearing people out there saying he wrote the lyrics. So you got Candle in the Wind, Six Gun Lover. What do you think that means, guys?
Does he have six guns? Or it would be like a six shooter, right? Like a revolver holds six rounds.
Right.
That was my take on it. And also, while we were watching the movie, I was like, what's a six gun? And then Dave and Cohen were both like, that gun that he's holding.
Right, like, right, okay.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so it's more literal, I guess, on that one.
I thought it was quite literal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Here's the thing I've been finding in this song. I mean, it's true to Westerns and true to sort of the Americana thing, but I'm wondering who he's talking to in this. And so I have a question up top here. Who is he answering or asking questions of? Is it God? Is it a priest? Because there's a lot of God stuff going on here.
There's some, biblical imagery in it, obviously.
Yeah.
I love the line, I don't know where I'm going, only God knows where I've been. He doesn't even know where he's been. He's been so many places and he's forgotten so much in his life. This is a road-weary man, even though he says later, he's just a boy. But he's lived a life.
How old is Billy the Kid when he dies? 21?
But he was super young.
Yeah.
Like he was just a kid.
A young gun?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. Now I'm getting the whole thing here. All right. I feel the God reference is going to come up a lot. When he says God knows where I've been, I think he actually means...
Do you feel that or do you know that because you've read the lyrics?
Well, I guess I don't want to expose my deck. Is that what they say in poker worlds? That sounds a lot dirtier than I meant. Let me try that again.
Show your hand?
I don't want to show my hand.
Yeah, okay.
All right. That I've read the lyrics. One more thing.
All right.
The drum kick.
Yes. You can feel him just stomping through that bass drum, right? It's so pronounced. It's so good.
Might be one of the best moments in post-glam rock history. Glam metal? Post-glam metal? Is it post-glam metal?
I would think so. So when this came out in 1990, and we've talked all about the death of heavy metal, glam metal, and the when grunge music came on board. When I was in grade 9, that would be 1991, and I went to a more rural high school. So we were always maybe a little bit behind. And this is before Bill and I went to school together. So grade 9 and 10, I was at this school in Niagara-on-the-Lake. And I remember all the cool guys in the school all had kind of quasi-glam metal hair still, but they all wore cowboy boots. Everyone was wearing cowboy boots with chains around the heels and everything.
The boulets. We sold them at the boot shop. Yeah. They were huge.
Yeah, because they were like fake boots, but just the bottoms looked like proper cowboy boots and everything. Yeah. But that was a huge look in 1990-91 when I was in grade 9. And I remember just being so envious of it when I was wearing my sweatpants and my really cheap high top shoes.
The next verse, okay, because we got that kick drum came in, and now we're going into the meat of this sandwich. You're brought into this world, but they say you're born in sin. Well, at least they've given me something I didn't have to steal or have to win. Well, they tell me that I'm wanted. Yeah, I'm a wanted man. You guys ready for this?
We're ready.
I'm a colt in your stable. I'm what Cain was to Abel. Mister, catch me if you can.
At the end of that, ha!
Yeah, I know.
Which is so good.
I had to hold back.
I was waiting for that last line. I thought you were going to sing it. I'm the cold in your stable. I was a cane. I can't even get it out. Like, it's so good.
It's so well done. Yeah. It's so well written. Here's the thing. Jon Bon Jovi wrote this song himself. He's a soul songwriter. He did write it on the napkin while he was chowing down on some New Mexican burger.
Well, that's what Emilio and Kiefer were.
Right. And
they're like, keep writing. Yeah, yeah. You get to eat later. You keep writing.
It is so well done. The whole thing is a fully realized song.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And Jon Bon Jovi is how old? Maybe in his early 30s or late 20s?
So he was born in 62. So assuming he wrote this in 89, 27 years old.
Now it's interesting. A lot of singers go out in a blaze of glory at 27.
That's right.
But Jon Bon Jovi did not. He wrote it and carried on.
Yes.
He had yet to write...
Bed of Roses.
I was going to say, It's My Life.
Oh.
Yeah, but sure. Well, we got lots to work through in those lines, right? So he's got the sin nature thing to start with.
Mm-hmm.
I like it because it has an old-timey preacher thing, right? Your original sin. You're brought into this world, but they say you're born in sin, which has that sort of apocalyptic preacher feeling that has the fatalism in there. Yeah. And then he turns it on his head and says, at least I've been given something I don't have to steal or have to win.
That sort of goes along with that road-weary sort of traveler, the crotchety old man. Well, you know, I didn't have to work for this. It was just given to me, but it's such a terrible thing to be given.
Right, but it's the outlaw. It's the Billy the Kid. It works really well.
Yeah.
Man, if only Young Guns 2 had the script written after Jon Bon Jovi gave them this.
Oh, I know, right?
This came after the script was written. Yeah. You know, he wrote this after reading the script. That means he read the script that we... Maybe out there there's a better version of Young Guns 2 that just...
That Jon Bon Jovi wrote in a diner on a napkin.
That Kiefer Sutherland didn't have to tell them he had to leave early, so they had to just dust off poor Scurlock. Oh, unbelievable. That makes me so mad. Okay. Well, they tell me that I'm wanted. Yeah, I'm a wanted man. I'm a colt in your stable. I'm what Cain was to Abel. Mister, catch me if you can. I feel we need to work through all three of these lines. Yeah. I want to start with, I'm a colt in your stable. I went to Wikipedia for this. Frank, Kate, you got anything to say about colts?
Well, aren't they kind of loose? They bolt? Like, that's what I'm imagining.
Yeah, because they're young horses, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
But there's also a Colt revolver.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was wondering, if it's a double entendre. But then I read up on Colts that they're a young male horse, not to be confused with a foal, which could be either, but they're between like 2 and 6, and they're not castrated yet.
Okay.
Also, what the heck is going on with horse keeping? They castrate these things?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
To tame them.
That's how you tame them?
Yeah, you don't want to actually do work and actually train them. You just start...
Okay. Thank you. For a second, I thought you knew what you were talking
about. No, never.
Okay, good. Now, colts in like the wild herds get kicked out by the stallion, who's kind of like the Lion King.
Oh, like the leader of the pride.
Yeah.
Leader of the pack. No, vroom, that's vroom. Motorcycles. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So the stallion kicks out the colts to keep from inbreeding from happening. They don't trust him. And so he's the colt in the stable. You got to be careful about him. And Billy the Kid is kind of like this wild force of nature.
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy. And every once in a while, the movies get it right that he's not to be trusted.
Yeah.
He's kind of weird. And then other times he seems like this like wise person. There's no way he was wise. He just was.
He was a kid.
Yeah. And he just moved. He just followed instincts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not going to talk about when Kiefer Sutherland says that he's not God. And then Billy the Kid says, well, why don't you shoot me and find out?
Was that number one or two?
Two. Of course it's two because it's stupid. So there's the colt in your stable. I'm what Cain was to Abel. And now on the Google lyric sheet, they had A-B-L-E, which is one of the more terrible renderings of Abel. A-B-E-L, Cain was to Abel. He's the bad guy, but from the beginning.
Well, Cain was the first murderer, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I also like to think that this is Bon Jovi maybe calling out Bruce Springsteen's Adam Raised a Cain.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't get New Jersey out of your blood.
Yeah.
God, I'm really working through here. Okay. All right. So there's more biblical stuff, of course. And then Mr. Catch Me If You Can has the fun quality of being an outlaw. We can forget about all the people he killed. He killed 21 people. Is that how many people Billy the Kid killed?
21 have been attributed to him. The actual number is probably less.
Right.
But yeah.
He killed a lot more people in the movies. Didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. He's killed more than me and you, though.
Yeah, combined. Yeah,
combined.
So on we go to chorus. We want to, anything else we want to say here?
The first two verses are really good in setting that scene of the outlaw, the traveler, going from town to town, doesn't have a home. He's lived this life and he knows kind of his place in the world.
All right, so chorus. I'm going down. It's hard to read this without singing. I'm going down in a blaze of glory. Take me now, but know the truth. I'm going down, although I think he says out, in a blaze of glory. Lord, I never drew first, but I drew first blood. I'm no one's son. Call me Young Gun.
Yes.
Accurate.
The chorus is so singable, so, so singable, except I never knew that he said, I'm no one's son, call me Young Gun. And in the second chorus, there's another misheard lyric that I have. But I love how this song and that chorus has been used so much in different popular culture, like in movies, TV, and it's always this big, grandiose scene. If I'm going down, I'm going down big. And that's what this has come to resemble, that term, blaze of glory.
We had such a good run, and then you used resemble again.
It's been a long time.
Okay. All right, Kate, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's okay. I didn't even catch that, actually. I did in the first time you used it, though. I was driving in my car, and I was, like, irritated.
Really? Did Bill tell you to say that?
No.
Oh.
No. I have my own thoughts sometimes, Frank. I that whole episode, I'm like, is somebody going to stop him?
So wait, were you pro or con me saying Bovine Joni?
I'm glad we shifted course back to the Bon Jovi.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't like it?
Yeah, I thought that's what I said in a polite way.
Oh, okay.
How does this chorus make you feel?
Oh, it makes me feel amazing.
Like an air guitarist.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, totally.
Feels like there was somewhere in somebody's middle school years, there's a, what were the, like the air bands, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They took a while to get to the chorus, and it was such a great payoff. You know, I'm going down in a blaze of glory. Take me now, but know the truth. What is the truth? He's going down in a blaze of glory. Or is this the truth? I never drew first, but I drew first blood. Did that happen in Young Guns?
Well, because he was quick with the iron.
Right.
He'd always say draw, and they'd make the first move, but Billy was faster.
Right. Because there's that scene where there's like the really likable guy, but he was escaping. Goes, hey, don't raise your gun. I don't want to kill you.
Yeah.
Then he kills him. Then he laughs about it.
Yeah. Well, he was a sociopath.
Yeah.
More of an anti-hero than anything.
There's a moment too, isn't there, where he's like, yeah, like, don't make me do it. Now I have to kill you.
Yeah.
Kind of. That's that kind of sense.
He gave him fair warning.
Yeah.
I think Billy was in the right.
The movie likes to do this. I'm kind of conflating the two movies, but remember Young Guns 1 where he kills the guy at the bar who's bragging about planning to kill Billy the Kid?
Yeah.
That felt inappropriate. Like, he could have left that guy. That guy was never going to find Billy the Kid.
Yeah, exactly.
They should have killed that guy in the outhouse a lot sooner, too, in Young Guns
1. Yeah, so Charlie Sheen wouldn't have died?
Yeah. They wanted to bring Charlie Sheen back for Young Guns 2. They
said, is that possible?
They said, remember the scene with the peyote? Couldn't you have Lou Diamond Phillips, like, bring him back to life? That's what the producers said. But the MGM or wherever it was.
Oh, yeah.
They're all like, come on. They're like, no, we can't. He got shot in the chest.
Yeah.
Which means it's going to be tough to get Kiefer Sutherland. And,
yeah, I don't think he's coming back unless he's like a force ghost or something.
I'm open to it.
Well, the Star Wars Young Guns crossover, when that finally happens.
Actually, I'm always just relieved to see Lou Diamond Phillips because I always think he's dead because Richie Valens died in La Bamba.
I saw
him in a recent episode of television. I'm like, no, it's okay. It's just in the movie. Lou Diamond Phillips is okay.
That spirit horse came back.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He was so good in Young Guns 1, Lou Diamond Phillips.
Yeah.
And then they didn't give him anything to do in Young Guns 2. He just stood around.
Yeah.
Same with Kiefer Sutherland. They kind of rewrote his character. He was just kind of angry. I would be too. Makes sense. He doesn't want to be around. But he doesn't get much to do. And the writing's poor.
The overarching theme in Young Guns 1 that was missing in Young Guns 2 was pals. They were all this group. And the one line as they're riding back to Lincoln in Young Guns 1 to save McSween and his wife was, you know, Billy, sometimes it's hard to be your pal. There's an obligation out of doing things with your friends. But in Young Guns 2, it was all necessity of just staying alive. That's the only reason they were together.
And then they brought up pals at one point, but then you realize Billy the Kid's just nuts. Ugh. What a bummer.
He's like that friend that is like awesome. And then you realize like a couple years later, he's like, no, this guy's just crazy.
At the beginning of Young Guns 1, he's not seeming to be really well liked by any of them when he first arrives.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
It is a leap that they're friendly, I guess.
Kind he's of a thing. Heck of a reader, though.
Yeah, that's true. William H. Bonney or Henry Antrim or whatever his other alias is. He did come from New York. He did come from a bit of an educated background before he made it to New Mexico.
I'm wondering how much he fits the character in John Bon Jovi's song.
Yeah.
So just heading into this, maybe third verse?
Third verse, yeah.
Okay. You ask about my conscience and I offer you my soul. Okay, who's he talking to?
It almost sounds like he's talking to, and this is the imagery that comes in later. It's a shootout or an executioner or something like that. There's a conflict here.
Yeah, priest, prosecutor, judge, angel. Kate, what are you thinking?
Well, isn't the idea that he's like he wants to be pardoned even at the beginning? The old man, isn't he?
You know what? It might be something like that too, right? Like it's, you'll ask me if I'll grow to be a wise man. Well, I'll ask you if I'll grow old. Maybe it is like a prosecutor or a judge or someone who has like, holds his life in the balance.
Or a priest or a news reporter. I just had this wave of brilliance come over me. I'm like, wait a second. He says, you ask if I'll grow to be a wise man. Well, ask if I'll grow old. You ask me if I've known love and what it's like to sing songs in the rain. Now that sounds like a reporter, like the reporter at the beginning of the movie.
Well, he was a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, let's go back. A lawyer. Let's say it's a lawyer asking, if you ever gone to a lawyer, I know when I went to a lawyer, they said, have you ever known love, Bill? Like, oh, okay, well, I guess we could talk about this. I just want to do my will. Well, I've...
I didn't know your lawyer was REO Speedwagon.
Yeah. Well, I've seen love come. I've seen it shot down. I've seen it die in vain. I think it's a worthwhile question to try to wonder who this character is talking to.
Yeah, it's kind of ambiguous. I think each line could be like a different person that they're talking to.
Well, maybe he's dying while he's sort of saying this.
Or it could be. Maybe
his last will.
A deathbed sort of confessional almost.
Yeah. Okay. So we have the chorus again. Mm-hmm. And then the amazing musical interlude.
So in the chorus, it changes up a little bit at the end. The last line is, Lord, I never drew first, but I drew first blood. I'm the devil's son. Call me Young Gun.
There it is again.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I always heard it as, Lord, I never drew first, but I drew first blood on the devil's side. Call me Young Gun. The heart is on the left side of your body, correct? So left-handed people were considered evil. That would be the devil's side.
Path
on the left side. So that was always my interpretation of, I drew first blood on the devil's side, on the left side, meaning he shot them in the heart.
And he's to blame?
Yeah.
Okay.
He gave love a bad name. Now that I actually read the lyrics, it's okay. Silly, Frank. You were silly.
Oh, don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah, no. It works. It's a great interpretation.
Yeah.
I like your take on it.
You're good liars, guys. Thank you.
I like the connection to Cain again. I'm the devil's son, right? Yeah. There's a sense that Cain is just, he's off. I like that he brings up the title of the movie.
Yeah.
And then we got that musical interlude, don't we?
First, the guitar solo. So Jeff Beck is just ripping.
And then the drums.
Yes. Before we go into the lyrics of that bridge, those drums, it's militaristic. It almost sounds like someone being drummed out to an execution, whether military or otherwise.
Yeah, we got a hand going on.
Yeah, which really fits with the lyrics of this bridge here.
Right, and the lyrics go back to religious stuff, right? Each night I go to bed, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. No, I ain't looking for forgiveness. But before I'm 6 foot deep. Now we know who he's talking to.
Yeah.
In this part, anyways. Lord, I gotta ask a favor, and I hope you'll understand. Cause I lived life to the fullest. Let this boy die like a man. Staring down the bullet, let me make my final stand.
And then that bonkers drumming at the end.
Each night I go to bed, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. No, I ain't looking for. Lord, I gotta ask a favor, and I hope you'll understand, cause I've lived life to the fullest, let this boy die like a man, staring down a bullet, let me make my final stand.
Well, I think that's, as you say, like the whole contrast of like, I'm Billy the Kid, but I'm a man. Like, I want to be sure if I'm going down.
Yeah.
Make no mistake.
I want to die the right way.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, there's the line in Tombstone where Doc Holliday is dying in the hospital in Arizona. And his comment was, "I always thought I'd die with my boots on," implying you die like not lying down in a hospital, right, but dying basically shot like in the streets, shot down. Yeah.
Right, right. Billy Kidd didn't stare down a bullet. He got shot in the back.
Yeah.
By that coward, Pat Garrett.
This is another thing between the two movies. The timeline of Pat Garrett is completely messed up there.
He de-aged about 20 years.
Yeah.
Between the two.
There's that. And at the end of Young Guns, they're already asking him to become a
sheriff.
A sheriff. But at the beginning of Young Guns 2, he's riding with Billy the Kid, which... I don't know if they did or not previously. So there was a bit of a continuity error there between the two movies, which again is part of the whole, okay, we have this movie that has done great and now let's capitalize on it and smash out a sequel really quick.
Yeah.
And let's, no one's going to have paid attention to that. No one has Netflix so they can watch it in the afternoon on a Sunday before they record a podcast about Young Guns 2. You can feel everything in the way that Jon Bon Jovi is singing this song. There is so much emotion. And the article that was written on this for Stereo Gum says, Jon Bon Jovi isn't a great singer, but he's a great emoter.
Yeah.
And you can feel everything in this song. This song is all feels.
Oh, yeah. I love his voice. I love it. I think it works perfectly.
Yeah. Somebody said he's not a great singer.
Yeah, in the Tom Brihan article.
That's an absolute lie.
Yeah.
By Tom Brihan. He's a fantastic singer.
Well, have you listened to Bed of Roses? Yeah, of course.
Well, we've hit through this song, Frank, Kate. It's time we talk about the video.
Yes, the video.
How are we feeling about Bon Jovi's sartorial glory?
The video is takes place at an abandoned drive-in movie theater, which is at the top of a canyon. And I can understand why it's abandoned. The public have very little access to get there. Who would put in a movie theater there? You can't get there. I don't understand. That was not a viable business decision.
The insurance would be insane.
It would be bonkers, yeah.
Because
do you know how many people would drive off the cliff?
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe Bon Jovi didn't fall off the cliff.
I know, right?
No, but it's... I gotta say, this is, we went there. It's near, it's right outside of Moab, Utah, where we traveled last spring.
Okay.
And it's actually quite like that. It's not like Canada. Like, it's like, just be smart. Use at your own risk. Realize there's a big drop. But also, what I like about it is, like, I actually think it references that spiritual nature of the song.
Yeah.
Because those, like, when you're there and you're in those canyons, like, it is... It's an experience to behold, like it's, and so I quite like I agree with the, I don't know, I don't believe there was a movie theater actually up there,
okay.
But like the setting itself.
When you started, just like, you went to the movie theater?
No.
But they burned the screen down at the end. How did you watch the movie, Kate?
But I think that they had to also, the movie had to go out, the video, everything had to go out in a blaze of glory.
Yeah.
Well, that was fitting. It was one of the great videos because it matched the song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And probably one of the great helicopter crane shots.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a crane, it's just a helicopter flying around them. The whole movie, just flying around Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
Which ended up in November Rain.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And years earlier, Moonlight Desires with Gowan.
Oh, that's right, too. Yeah.
So, yeah, expensive to film this video. I mean, there's a lot of money into this.
Mm-hmm.
Except in the wardrobe.
Shirtless, right? Does he have a vest?
I thought he was wearing a vest, right?
He's wearing a vest.
Yeah. No shirt.
Instead of, like, traveling to and from a hotel for the video, the band and everyone just camped out in that canyon
for
3 days.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like with a, what? A blank? What did he use? Something for a pillow?
Old coat for a pillow.
Old coat for a pillow? The earth was my bed that night?
Here it is. Wow. Song facts. The music video, directed by Wayne Isham, was shot atop a 1,000-foot cliff outside Moab, Utah. Everything needed for the Western-styled shoot was flown in by a helicopter. To save the hassle of flying to and from a hotel, John and the crew camped out in the desert for 3 days.
Wow, that's a long shoot.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel that long. It's like, well, just get that chopper up there. Get some shots.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, so you were in Moab. You actually named it.
Yeah, we were.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it would take 3 days to shoot that video. I mean, you saved time because John wasn't wearing a shirt. So there's all that wardrobe time that he didn't have to spend mm-hmm. there.
That's right.
A little extra time on the hair, though.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of balance it out, right? Yeah.
This is the end of John Bon Jovi's, like, imperial hair.
Yeah.
He goes to Keep the Faith hair, which is a great album and moment in their career. But it was like a renewal moment.
Yeah. Well, it's like when Metallica cut their hair for which album was it? Load, I think it was. Yeah. They took a lot of flack for that.
Yeah. This, I think Bon Jovi pulled it off much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was able to leave that hair behind and redefine himself.
Yeah. Redefine himself and the band, really. All their big hits after that were more ballady.
Yeah.
Not that they didn't have ballads before, but they were grown up.
Yeah. They still spent about $400 to $500 on their hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, but like fancier hair.
All right. Well, the video ends with the movie theater going up in flames, or at least the screen.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty awesome look.
Yeah. Went down in a blaze of glory.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Kate said that already.
Well, I didn't want to say anything, but I did.
Let me take credit for things that Kate has said.
All right. So should we talk some categories?
I think so, yeah.
I got some random trivia for you. I think you both know that Tom Cruise was in Young Guns 1.
Yes.
Yeah. Which links to my earliest appearance on this podcast.
That's right.
The by whole the way, Oscar-winning or Oscar-nominated song.
Yeah.
With Tom Cruise.
Yeah, and now Tom Cruise being in Young Guns 1, not Young Guns 2, because he got killed in Young Guns 1. So Tom Cruise gets shot to death in Young Guns 1. That's why we don't see him again.
Yeah.
And
might be in Young Guns 3 though.
Yeah, you know, hopefully.
Yeah.
There was another actor, singer, who fired the Gatling gun in Young Guns 1.
Oh, okay.
Who actually wrote a song called Young Guns that didn't get used. It was Randy Travis.
Really?
Randy Travis killed McSweeney.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That so is that trivia.
Was some trivia for you.
Okay. Sorry. I was completely thinking about Randy Quaid. What did Randy Quaid write?
Cousin Eddie can't hide himself. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not going to work. There's some trivia. Also, in Young Guns 2, we have Balthazar Getty, who plays young Tom, who actually was much older in real life and friends of Billy the Kid and maybe buried with him with Charlie and all the other people.
Yeah.
I think he's buried with him with Charlie.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if anyone scrolled Pals on their graves. Because I don't know who would do that.
Yeah.
Not Doc Scurlock. He's up in New York.
Yeah,
living
teaching.
The life.
Yeah. With his 6 kids.
Yeah, he had even more, didn't he?
Or did he? Oh, okay.
Was it
6 or 16? I know the number 6 was in there. I think 26 is just too much.
So the Balthazar Getty, I'm going to get there. Like, his grandfather was the bad guy. Was he the bad guy in that, all the money in the world? The bad guy is Getty. Yeah, he's the millionaire.
The guy
is
that
the bad
was
guy.
Supposed to be Kevin Spacey, but then became Christopher Plummer, yeah.
Yeah, so his dad was the one who got kidnapped. So Balthazar Getty's dad got kidnapped. Yeah. And Balthazar Getty is married to Rosetta Millington, who we talked about in Wild Horses.
That's right.
Gino Benelli.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's the wife of Balthazar Getty. So all these connections to our previous podcasts.
Yeah. So just listen to all of our episodes, people, and you'll hear all these fun things and forget them, like I have.
Who else could cover this song? I got somebody.
I was going to say, you have someone in mind, don't you?
I do. I'm going to throw a curveball at you here. Ready? Weird Al Yankovic. I think a Weird Al Yankovic song would be perfect because I know you're a big fan, Frank.
What would he call it then?
It's going to be called Finding Dory instead of Blaze of Glory. And the chorus goes, I'm going down to watch Finding Dory. And then there's some other clever parts of the movie. We're going to talk about Ellen. It's going to be very clever. So
you worked really hard on that.
I did. Yeah, that was this morning. I thought about it. So that's my idea. I think Weird Al Yankovic, I think it's a bit too late. However, what the heck? It's in this era, there's no more time. We can run back and forth.
Who else could do this song, though? It comes at that very specific time. And like I mentioned, in high school, when it was like cowboy boots and cowboy rock were a thing. Yeah. And this is 100% like a cowboy rock song. It's not a country song. It's not a hard rock song. It's a cowboy rock song. I'm trying to think.
Wow, Kid Rock does not feel good to me, Kate.
No.
No, but that is on the table.
Honestly, that's what came into my mind. But I was like, no, I can't say that.
I feel you could lean into some country elements on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm also interested in like the most horrible version that I can imagine. And the most horrible version I can imagine is where American Idol does a special Bon Jovi tribute night. And then like the number six person does Blaze of Glory and doesn't hit the notes quite right. I can think of a whole bunch of characters from when I used to watch American Idol who I would put in there and be like, oh, this is terrible. Where they just sing it without any conviction, but as though they're like karaoke superstars, which is a lot of what American Idol is.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel it's like the worst thing ever.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, this is a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Garth Brooks then, if we want to have a country singer take a stab at.
I like the idea of an old Garth Brooks doing this.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to have to take a mulligan on this one. I'm just not putting it together.
That's fair. Yeah. Next one, special category for just tonight, or maybe the next one if there's Oscar nominations. The other Oscar nominated songs. You got them in front of you?
I have them here, yeah. So obviously, Blaze of Glory from Young Guns 2.
Yep. And Bon Jovi played together that night.
With the band.
Which kind of demonstrated that they were back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm checking out from Postcards from the Edge.
That was a tough one to find. I went through Spotify, couldn't find it. It's written by Shel Silverstein.
Yeah, that's which right.
Surprised me. Meryl Streep killed it in the, I know you're really interested in hearing this, Frank, killed it in the end of the movie, Postcards from the Edge, written by Carrie Fisher about her drug addiction.
Yeah.
And Debbie Reynolds is her mom, but this time it's Shirley MacLaine, Meryl Streep. This song is really good. Backing band. This is the trivia. You're not going to know this. It's a Canadian band that started to Okay, let's try again. But it's from 1990, and this Canadian band was about to sort of ascend.
Bare Naked Ladies.
Not quite, but they were kind of a country-ish band.
Blue Rodeo.
That's correct.
Really?
Blue Rodeo is the backing band. So if you watch in the video, you can see Basil doing the bass in the background.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, cool.
What is the song called?
I'm Checking Out.
I'm Checking Out.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm checking it out. Not right now, but later.
Well done. Then Somewhere in My Memory from Home Alone.
Boring.
Yeah.
Boring so bad.
Okay. Home Alone?
Yeah, John Williams wrote this, and it's like...
Oh, the song, the movie.
I'm like, wait.
I would play it for you, but instead I'll give you my version. Somewhere in my memory. That's what I feel it is, although I know it's supposed to be prettier, but I hate it. I hated what I heard. Yeah. Hated it.
Then Promise Me You'll Remember, Godfather Part 3.
I didn't know this one at all, but Harry Connick Jr. sang it. It was kind of pretty.
And then the song that won from your favorite movie is Sooner or Later from Dick Tracy.
Oh, it's so bad. I can't believe they picked this song too. And when you hear it, it's like just Oscar bait.
Yeah.
And you know there was a horrible song and dance number that went with it.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, I don't know. You know because you watched the movie.
Oh, yeah.
You had the t-shirt.
Yeah, I did have the t-shirt. Oh, it's so bad. Oh, it's so bad. But at least Bon Jovi got to play at the Oscars. Exactly. It should have won.
Yeah.
It won in our hearts because no one cares about these songs.
No, I don't know any of these songs.
Not a single Madonna compilation that I could find put on the song that won the Oscar.
Yeah.
That's how she feels about it. Next up, did you bring a mixtape to the proceedings? Kate, did you bring a mixtape?
Bill, I did bring a mixtape, actually.
Okay, well, Kate, we're ready for your mixtape.
Okay, well, I went with an Emilio Estevez theme.
Oh, nice. Boy. Okay,
so,
I'm ready.
Don't You Forget About Me from The Breakfast Club.
Okay. Oh, we're hitting up the Emilio Estevez movies?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
good. Okay.
Exactly. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, Good Vibrations from The Mighty Ducks.
Oh, very nice.
Good.
The Rhythm Is Gonna Get You from Stakeout.
Oh, yeah, with Richard Dreyfuss.
Yep, you got it. The Man in Motion or the St. Elmo's Fire. From St. Elmo's Fire.
Nice.
What a horrible movie.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible.
And then, because not an Emilio Estevez movie, but an Emilio Estevez ex-wife, Straight Up by Paula Abdul.
They were married?
Yes, they were. For all 2 years,
I think it was.
Oh.
Frank, when she wrote Will You Marry Me, Boy, was written for Emilio Estevez.
Oh, I did not know that. I am not up on my late 80s, early 90s celebrity marriages.
Well, then that means we need to do a Paula Abdul episode.
I think we definitely do.
It's so
featuring DJ Scat Cat.
Yeah, of course. Well, that was good. That was good.
That was great.
That was very good.
Thank you. There weren't many other like well-known hits in or Emilio Estevez movies to draw from.
Okay, Frank, I'm wondering how much crossover we have.
Okay, I'm going to let you go first. I feel like I've stolen way more of yours than you have of mine.
Okay. Do you have enough? Can you handle this? I don't know if you can handle this.
Frank, can you handle this?
Okay. Mine are songs about cowboys. Hey, Frank?
I'll get my pen to start crossing things off.
Yeah. Okay, because I feel there's at least one that you will have on there. First one is Streets of Laredo by Marty Robinson.
Okay.
So I went deep into like country from the 50s.
Okay, yep.
That song is amazing. Yeah. I didn't realize. I know Marty Robbins when I hear it, but holy cow.
And that's the one that Johnny Cash covered, correct?
Yes, yeah. That's right. Yeah. When a Cowboy Trades His Spurs for Wings from The Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Oh, okay.
I went with the Tim Blake Nelson version, not with Welch?
Gillian Welch.
Gillian Welch, yeah, not with that one. Highwayman by the Highwaymen.
Oh, okay.
Willie Nelson, Johnny Cash, Kris Kristofferson, and Waylon Jennings. Ghost Riders in the Sky, Johnny Cash, because this is another one where it's all the same thing, like a cowboy coming to meet his fate and whether or not he's going up or down. And then I ended off with Knocking on Heaven's Door, Bob Dylan.
Oh, okay.
And that's from Billy the Kid movie. Yeah. And it's about, I think it's about going to heaven or the other place.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you didn't cross anything off.
I didn't cross anything off. My mixtape is songs with cowboy feels.
Oh, good. Okay.
So whether it feels like a cowboy rock song or it specifically names cowboys in it. So I start with Sweet Baby James by James Taylor. There is a young cowboy.
Oh, yeah.
Eh? Then Ride Like the Wind by Christopher Cross.
Oh, yes.
The Ballad of Billy the Kid by Billy Joel.
Good call.
Every Rose Has Its Thorn by Poison. That feels cowboy to me.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just Like Jesse James by Cher. And then I am closing it all off with Wild Wild West by Will Smith.
Oh, that is the worst song ever. There's all those other Wild West songs. There's like two other Wild West songs.
That's the one I picked.
Oh, come on.
It's either that or Rhinestone Cowboy.
Like a rhinestone cowboy. Riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo.
Okay, that was solid, solid mixtape we got going there. And I feel Blaze of Glory is one of those songs that's super good. Like, we're not trying to convince somebody that it's a great song.
No.
I don't think anyone would need to be convinced.
Yeah.
It's one of those songs that you're going to sing in your car and you're going to be completely off key and screeching at the top of your lungs as you're trying to hit those notes and you're doing it completely unashamedly.
What part are you going to be most likely to sing?
Well, the chorus.
Okay.
Yeah. Like the shot down in a blaze of glory.
Like, yeah, it's going to sound just like that.
Exactly.
Hey, like you're the same?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Because I'm going to start it in the wrong key. I'm going to start way too high, and I'm just going to be reaching for all those notes.
I'm just excited to get to the one is I'm a devil in the run, a six-gun lover, a candle in the wind.
Yeah.
And then I'm a colt in your stable. I'm what Cain was to Abel. Mr. Catch me if you can. Shot! And then I'd stop singing because I lose my confidence.
Yeah.
But I would nail it there.
I would not
lose your confidence.
No, I would lose my confidence well before that.
Okay. That's good. I want to thank Kate for joining us for your third episode. And finally, we have someone who actually has seen Bon Jovi. I feel with ticket prices, none of us will ever see Bon Jovi again or ever.
Probably not, no.
I don't see that one happening again, no.
Yeah, but good concert, right. Huh?
Great, great. Had like, you know, the cement wall behind, like that's where we were.
Oh, okay, you're
far
right
up
the back.
As you could way possibly
up in the nosebleeds, yeah.
Okay.
But it was so good.
Oh,
so,
it would so be good. The sing-along sort of thing, yeah. Right? Everyone be in.
This was back in the day, well, again, vague time period, but early to mid 2000s. I think I still had the, you know, like the Nokia phone that everyone had.
Oh, yeah, the indestructible ones.
Yes. Yeah. I called our good friend of the podcast, Kara, played Living on a Prayer for her.
Oh,
couldn't
man.
Hear a thing. Just yeah, but
she just heard screams. You know,
she just heard it. She was there.
John Bon Jovi, if you're listening, we are certainly open to like a private concert here. You can play for free.
Yeah, we'll allow it.
Yeah, yeah. You can camp out in Frank's backyard, just like you did for this video shoot.
Use an old coat for a pillow. There's no way I'm letting Joe Bovine Joni into my house.
Oh, we had some moments there.
We had a good run.
Yeah.
And then he brought it back.
Well, dear listener, we do appreciate you being with us here as we celebrate John Bon Jovi's crowning achievement for his very first single. What a way to start.
Yeah, this was a bonkers introduction.
We want you to know the truth, that if we're all going down together, we will go down in a blaze of glory.
Mostly for the stuff on my browser history, but... We want to thank Kate for joining us on Bill and Frank's Guilt-Free Pleasures.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me again. Glorious.